It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. Hello. You're tuned in to 2A Radio, the biggest, baddest, best, meanest, coolest Second Amendment dedicated radio show in the country, coast to coast and online. You can always stream at 2aradio.com. Matter of fact, all of the archives are available on the archives page at 2aradio.com. Additionally, you can always get a hold of me through my email address, which is bill@2aradio.com. 2A, not two-way. Some people confuse that as though there's a two-way radio. It's a one-way radio. I'm talking, you're listening. One way. It's two A's and Second Amendment. We don't talk just about the Second Amendment on this show. We talk about all of our rights. We talk about political corruption. We talk about different things that are going on in the country when it comes to guns and rights and, quite honestly, fighting back against tyrannical things that different government officials or, you know, the entire United States Congress might be doing, whatever it is. We talk about it. We talk about, you know, this healthcare overhaul wannabe. We talk about immigration, gun rights, First Amendment rights, and where a lot of people really misinterpret these things. For instance, rights are a guarantee between you and your government. That's what a right is a guarantee to. It's not a right between you and somebody else. If you want to walk into my house and start talking about some sort of a political diatribe that just comes forth, I can tell you, you know what? Not in my house. I can subvert your First Amendment right to freedom of speech in my house. Who cannot do that is a government official. As well, who cannot do that is a place of a public accommodation. Like, let's say, your favorite supercenter where you can go in for groceries or your a new belt or pair of shoes. You can't just go into any private establishment that has restrictions on who can come in and come out and do whatever you want with your rights. However, a public accommodation, the open streets, or a business which is open to the general public, that sort of thing, well, those folks really cannot subvert your rights, which is commonly something that happens with only your Second Amendment rights. You may go into a grocery store, which is open to anybody that wants to go in there and spend money. And if you carry a gun, they might say, oh, we don't want you to carry a gun in here. They're now subverting your Second Amendment right. Would they be able to tell you you can't go on your political diatribe in this store? No, they cannot. They'd be violating your rights. That's been proven in many, many court cases, so they don't do it anymore. But yet they're still willing to say you can't bring your gun in here to protect yourself? Okay, you're taking away my right, my inalienable God-given right to self-protection, guaranteed in the Constitution and upheld by the Supreme Court more than once to carry this gun for self-protection. You're telling me I can't do it? Well, then you better provide me a suitable substitute. These are the types of things we talk about here on 2A Radio. All right? So, we've got a hell of a show coming at you today. So, stay tuned. We've got plenty coming. If you'd like to send me any emails or comments on the show, please do. Bill@2aradio.com. We'll be right back right after these words.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
All right, so we have a story here I want to get into out of Texas, where the Texas Rangers are about to investigate whether a man shot a deputy in self-defense. Now, this last Saturday night, Bandera County Sheriff Deputy shot and killed 57-year-old William Cavaness in his home just moments after he shot one of their fellow deputies. Now, the deputy's bulletproof vest saved his life, and Texas Rangers will have to figure out whether these deputies identified themselves when they went to Cavaness's home to serve a search warrant. His wife, who was inside the home at times, said the deputies did not identify themselves. She says, "Let it be known that my husband was defending our home against what we thought were intruders, and that's the truth," says Pamela Cavaness, William's widow. Sheriff Wendell Tucker disagrees. Of course, Sheriff Tucker wasn't even there, but he's going to disagree. He says, "Any time you want to claim self-defense for somebody that commits aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, then shoots a police officer, it's kind of hard to claim self-defense," says Sheriff William Tucker of Bandera County. Now, the aggravated assault, Sheriff Tucker was referring to, an incident that happened 6 hours earlier. The sheriff's office said Cavaness got into a fight with two men and ended up shooting one of them in the back. All right. So, again, he says anytime you want to claim self-defense for somebody that commits aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and then shoots a police officer, it's kind of hard to claim self-defense. All right. So, I disagree with Sheriff Weldon Tucker. Now, I want to clarify something. A good friend of mine, a guy that I see a couple times a week, we go shooting together. As a matter of fact, he and I were shooting on Sunday. He swung by the house for a couple of minutes two nights ago, dropped back by last night just to chit-chat for a couple of minutes. Just a buddy of mine. He lives about a mile and a half from me. And he says to me, he goes, "You know, I don't get to listen to your show every day, but I do get to listen to it often enough." And he says, "Do you hate cops?" And I'm thinking, you know, I guess I could understand why someone would ask that question. The answer is no. As a general statement, I don't hate cops. However, I do hate when cops don't live and operate above board at all times. Because that was my mantra when I was a cop. My goal was to live and act on duty above board at all times, and off duty as well. All too often you hear stories about cops that are off duty that act even worse than they do when they're on duty. There was a perfect example back in, I believe it was in Maryland, that we spoke about several months ago, where an off-duty cop was sitting in his personal truck with his kids in a red zone, a fire zone, outside of a grocery store. And a resident was walking out, saw this, stopped, turned around, and started giving the guy crap. Says, "This doesn't look like a fire truck, and you don't look like a fireman." So he shows him his police ID badge. He was a state trooper, I believe, if memory serves correct. And he says, "That's all I need." And he says, "Well, it doesn't look like you're much on duty either, because baby seats and kids in private vehicles don't really scream that you're on duty." Well, as it turns out, this guy, this cop, followed the citizen that gave him garbage home. And what happens about 5 or 10 minutes later? State troopers come pounding on his door, forcing their way into his home, as though there's exigent circumstances, and arrest him. So, not only was the cop doing something he shouldn't have done, he obviously lied to the other cops, his buddies that were on duty, to get them to do what they did. Lied to them, because nobody would have done anything else. You remember the incident of the detective in Washington, D.C., that got really pissed off that people were throwing snowballs and they hit his Humvee, his Hummer that he was driving, his H2. Pulled his gun out on people that had thrown snowballs, and then got on his radio and called for backup, and all these uniformed cops show up. And when the uniformed cops realize he had pulled his gun out and caused a big scene because somebody threw snowballs at his ride. They really started to back off on this. It's like, well, we're here because why? So that's the sort of thing that I hate. And, yeah, it's one of these deals. I talk a lot about Las Vegas Metro because I was on Las Vegas Metro. I was a patrol officer. And they, for some reason or another, have been in, I guess, about 20 different shootings this year. And every single one of them, when someone dies, goes to this coroner's inquest, which is a joke. They just had an inquest on the 22nd of August, 2010, where a cop ended up executing a guy on his knees with his hands above his head in a bathroom of a one-bedroom apartment with an AR-15 rifle. One shot to the head, split his head wide open, executed him on his knees, and then claimed something different. The other four cops didn't support his claims. The widow of this guy didn't support the cop's claims. The widow of the victim did not support the assassin's claims. And the assassin himself was even lying, as you could tell from his different interviews, the different investigations. He kept changing his story even so much in the coroner's inquest. And the district attorney went so far as to basically call him a liar in the open session. I don't want to call it open court because it's really it's a kangaroo court. And they came back and ruled it justified. A 00 status for Las Vegas Metro. A license to kill. Never a prosecuted cop since at least 1969, probably further. Never. Not for murder. Not for murder on duty. They prosecuted a guy for murder off duty who actually went and did a drive-by with another off-duty cop. And the one who was driving, I actually knew that guy. They got all liquored up, went out driving drunk, went down to a rather crappy area of town. One hung out the window and just randomly started shooting, doing a drive-by, and killed a Hispanic guy. Two Las Vegas Metro cops did this. So, am I hard on cops? Yes. Because I expect them to operate above board. There's a guy running for sheriff of the county I live in. I live in Nye County, Nevada. We are northwest of Las Vegas, about 45 minutes. This guy's name is Scott Coble. He is currently a Nevada Highway Patrol officer. He's running against an incredibly popular and constitutionally sound sheriff, who is Tony DeMaio. And Tony served two terms, which right there gives me enough reason to vote for somebody else, because I am a two-term limit kind of a guy. And if you served more than two terms in any one office, it's time to go, with very, very, very little exception. Very little exception. However, I have to tell you that Tony DeMaio is one of those exceptions. I mean, he's a retired cop from Jersey City. He was born in Brooklyn, comes out here, starts working for the sheriff's department in some capacity. I forget. I think he's a deputy or a bailiff or something. Runs for sheriff against a very tyrannical sheriff. Wins. And then runs for re-election 4 years ago. The former sheriff tried to get his old job back. He lost in fine fashion. It is a nonpartisan office. Tony DeMaio won huge in the primary. 70% of the popular vote. Now, in most areas, if you have a nonpartisan election and you get more than 50% of the vote and a nonpartisan, you don't even go to the general election. Here, you do. I don't understand why. But they are. They're going to the general election. Scott Coble is a Highway Patrol officer, which tells me misdemeanor cop in a felony world, tickets and accidents, and that's it. And I met a guy yesterday who knows him and claims that Scott Coble said that he's so above board that he would write his own mother a ticket if he thought she broke the law. Which tells me I don't want this guy. Because what he is law enforcement. You break a law, I'll enforce it. Not policing. Not, look, we're here to help the citizens. Not enforce the laws and work for the legislature. We're here to work for the people and help the people out. And if you break a law along the way, we're going to look at it. And if you deserve a ticket or if you deserve to be arrested, then that's what we're going to do. But to work for the legislature's law enforcement, I don't agree with that at all. So, there you go. That's my two cents. Stay tuned, guys. We have plenty more to come after the break. And we're going to get into this. We're going to get into an open carry proposed ban in California and how that happened at the legislative level. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Welcome back. In the state of California, back in the late 60s, the Black Panthers got together and they marched on the state capitol in Sacramento. And they all were carrying, I shouldn't say all, but the mob, for the most part, was carrying guns, handguns, shotguns, rifles, whatever it was. They were carrying loaded guns on the steps right out front of the Capitol building. And they did this to protest some different laws that were going on, which was completely legal. However, state lawmakers felt scared. So rather than allowing the people, these scary black folk, to carry guns, they passed a statewide law banning the carrying of loaded guns. However, they did provide that you could carry an unloaded gun, and you could have ammunition on you as long as it was not in the gun. So, realizing this, in the last 2 or 3 years, a number of open carry gun rights groups have gotten together, as well as individuals, and they started carrying openly exposed handguns that are unloaded, but they carry ammunition on them in most cases, like a pouch with a magazine in it, so you could insert it into the gun, run the action, and be able to shoot. Or if it's a revolver, speed loaders. So you could pop open the cylinder, drop the speed loader, drop the rounds in there, and be ready to shoot. Or even they might even have full moon clips. You can just drop straight in there and close it. You don't have the extra speed loader left over to drop. So this has been going on in California for the last good couple, 2 or 3 years. And of course, what happens with this is the police chiefs and sheriffs decide that they don't like it because their cops go out on calls for service. Okay. Remember Detective Rod Kuratomi in, I forget where it was, somewhere in the northern central California, ended up putting a message on Facebook because they had open carriers that they went out on and said, you know, go out on them with guns. If they make a furtive movement, 2 weeks off with pay, meaning shoot them because that's the standard response is 2 weeks off with pay. So he's saying gun down citizens exercising their rights. Now, their rights are being subverted because the guns have to be unloaded. Even in light of both Heller and McDonald out of the Supreme Court, they're considering banning open carrying of guns. Now, it passed the Assembly. However, on this past Monday, it did not make it through the Senate. The Senate voted 20-16, which fell short of the majority needed. Now, they're going to actually try to bring it back up to vote on in the Senate again. It got voted on, got rejected. Now they want to vote on it again to try to pass it. And what this law would do, this is the bill AB, Assembly Bill 1934, which is interesting, 1934, was when the NFA, the National Firearms Act, was passed, National Firearms Act of 1934. Now it would be the There's No Way You're Allowed to Carry Any Sort of a Gun Whatsoever in the State of California 1934 Act, AB 1934. Anyhow, it was introduced after a series of demonstrations by gun rights organizations, which they encouraged participants to openly carry unloaded weapons. Now, because the police chiefs and sheriffs, the servants of our community, the minions, the do-as-I-tell-you-to-do servant, you know, maid, gardener, police chief, sheriff, servants of our communities, garbage collector, police chief, sheriff, okay, the servants didn't like it. They didn't like dispatching deputies to people with that were freaking out, saying, "Oh my God, there's a guy walking down the street with a gun. There's a guy in the Starbucks with a gun." So they dispatch cops to do this. And the cops, all they're allowed to do is to check to make sure the gun is unloaded. They can't ask you for all your ID and all this other garbage, by the way the law was written. Make sure it's unloaded, give it back to you. Right? That's, and then leave. That's all they can do. And of course, they want to be able to do an actual Terry stop and investigate the hell out of you, get your ID, detain you, blah, da, 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 da. For simply exercising your right, carrying a gun and an unloaded gun at that. Guys, I carry a loaded gun on a regular basis, and I never get harassed by the cops. The only people that have harassed me about carrying a gun are the scumbag derelicts at Costco, which is why I don't shop at Costco anymore. Now I go to Sam's Club, and guess what? They're all hugs and kisses there. "Hey, how are you? Good to see you, blah, blah, blah. Can I help you find anything? Is it good mood?" Everybody there is nice. Sam's Club's where it at. Costco doesn't like guns. Well, we're actually going to hit that a little bit more. I'm preparing a show dealing with that for next week. Got a very interesting email from a buddy of mine, a former Marine named Jeff, about his experience at Costco. So we're preparing a show. Anyhow, the legislation in AB 1934 in California did not pass. They are going to try to get it to pass and push it and push it and push it until they can. And evidently, they don't mind the idea that they might lose their jobs in November. But, you know, what are you going to do? It is California. It is their own little communist state. Anyhow, guys, stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. We're going to talk about more anti-gun politicians when we return. Stay tuned. You're listening to Bill Carnes right here on 2A Radio.
Listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Somebody get a silencer for this guy. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Alright guys, welcome back. I have a piece here that I pulled up on the internet. What it is it's a guy that is a pro-gun guy and he's a writer. And he wrote a story about the mayor of Portland, Oregon, and his attempts to get this guy to kind of support the anti-gun claim, which is really rather an interesting approach. But I want to read this to you. It says, "Portland Mayor Adams wants me to denounce gun group." He says, "A war of words has erupted between Portland Mayor Sam Adams and a local gun lobby over proposed gun law changes." Now, Oregon Firearms Federation Kevin Starrett calls the mayor's latest gun control proposals laughable and pathetic. Adams counters it off as bullying tactics that stall out even the most common sense gun safety legislation. Now, common sense gun legislation is never common. All right? It's never common. It's always very uncommon anti-gun. So just the term common sense gun anything when it comes to legislation or safety legislation, just it doesn't work out. That's a total lefty using that term. Now, Mayor Adams made the same claim on his Twitter social networking page. He says, let's see, why common sense gun reforms are often stalled, bullying by Oregon's only non-compromised gun lobby. Well, why do you, if you're there upholding a right, what is there to compromise? You know, if you want to practice your Christian religion freely, should you have to compromise portions of your religion to do it for the sake of a politician? Now, this article continues by saying, it struck me that activists merely being vocal wouldn't stand much of a chance bullying the guy who controls both the Portland Police Bureau's budget and the appointing firing of its chief. So I sent him this. Who's the bully? The only ones are your team. To which he replied, David, please actually read his website quote, "No Compromise Gun Lobby" is right on the front page. Bullying with the use of personal attacks by gun use advocates is commonplace here in Oregon. Others who have attempted to change gun laws, like Oregon State Senator Ginny Burdick, have been unfairly personally polarized by gun use lobbyists. As a leader in the National Gun Use Coalition, even though we might disagree on the issue, I encourage you to denounce the Oregon Firearms Federation statement. I will encourage my supporters to stick to the facts as well. He continues by saying, the gun safety reforms I have proposed pose no threat to law-abiding gun owners. They should have been approved by the Oregon State Legislature years ago, and you should show support for them, Sam. Well, Sam says, I'll respond to his points. There are many to respond to. So this is really what the mayor of Portland is getting at. In the meantime, here's his account. He says, bullying by gun use advocates has stymied even modest gun safety reforms in the Oregon legislature. Just FYI, ongoing discussions with David Cordera, the guy that wrote this, and the mayor, he says, regarding gun safety public tactics. Its bio says, David Cordero is a long-standing gun rights advocate and writer, a featured columnist for Guns Magazine. His articles and his online journal, The War on Guns, definitely challenge the folly of citizen disarmament. Which is right. And you're trying to get this guy to actually support you in your anti-gun ways? Preposterous. It's amazing to me that an elected official for a city is trying to get statewide gun ban of some sort or another initiated, and use someone who's popular on the pro-gun side to be your mouthpiece, to be your horse, to get behind you on this. You've got to be up there smoking weed. You've got to be high, Mayor Adams of Portland, Oregon. You've got to be high, drunk, or just plain stupid. Which any of those would exemplify the average politician at your level. But who knows? I'm just guessing. Now, back here in the state of Nevada, we have Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who is the absolute black eye of the state of Nevada. The state of Nevada, for the most part, is incredibly embarrassed that Harry Reid hails from Nevada. I mean, really, a very, very shameful fact. And we have gambling and prostitution. But our shameful, shameful thing that we have here in Nevada is that Harry Reid hails from this state and is Senate Majority Leader. We're poised to rectify that by electing Sharon Angle to that Senate seat. And of course, they say, well, a freshman senator doesn't wield much authority. You know, the Senate Majority Leader hasn't wielded any good authority. Of every dollar that comes from the hands of Nevada residents, that goes from their pockets here in the state of Nevada to the federal government, with the Senate Majority Leader in place, we get back 65 cents of that dollar in federal funding. We're losing more than a third of the money that we pay in that doesn't come back. We'd be better off not paying anything to the feds and just paying it to the state. We'd be way better off. Nevada has the highest unemployment rate of the entire country. Number one out of the 50 states for unemployment is Nevada. And again, we have the Senate Majority Leader. With representation like that, we can't afford to keep him there. Well, there was a comment about domestic enemies, which hit a nerve with Reid. The idea that there are people within Congress who would want to harm the United States has hit a nerve with good old Harry Reid. Reid personally called out Sharon Angle, his opponent, going for this Senate seat in November, after an audio clip came to light in which his Republican challenger agreed with a conservative radio host that there are domestic enemies in the Senate and the House. Just a short while ago, Reid launched a further defense of the Senate and its members from both parties. When he was asked about the comment outside a renewable energy conference at the JW Marriott in Las Vegas, he says, "To suggest anyone in the United States Senate is a domestic enemy of the country is really
To suggest anyone in the United States Senate is a domestic enemy of the country is really taking it way beyond the pale," according to Reid. As he told, reporter Laura Meyer from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, the newspaper, he says, "You know, I understand what the Second Amendment is, but I defended members of the United States Senate, Democrats and Republicans. If Mitch McConnell, the Republican Senate leader, were hit, we would do the same thing." Senator
Harry Reid is not here in the studio. That was me mimicking him. I understand that that is incredibly close, if not spot on. Realize that is me doing his voice. That wasn't actually Harry, even though it sounded just like him. Anyhow, to my ears. Reid has been in Congress for 28 years and is seeking six more. You know, 28 years. In most jobs, if you serve 20, you get retirement. Now, in Congress, if you serve one term, just 2 years in the House, you receive that pay for the rest of your life. Send him home. Time to retire. Go back to wherever it is you're from. Searchlight, Nevada. That's true. Searchlight, Nevada. He's one of the Senate's leading institutionalists, much like one of his mentors, the late Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, who died over the summer, which, you know, might explain his strong reaction to the domestic enemies, of which there are plenty in the United States Congress. He is one of them, which is why he took such offense. But at the same time, Republicans are pointing out that Reid also has flirted with the line between acceptable and unacceptable criticism of fellow senators. If he's not crossed it entirely, he's at least flirted with it. The Angle campaign spokesman Jared Edgen pointed out that Reid just months ago suggested Republicans were anti-American in filibustering a financial reform bill. Really? It's your rules of the Senate, and they're being anti-American? Because you guys want to just send socialism our way. What happened to Robert Byrd? I'm sorry, not Robert Byrd. It was Joseph McCarthy. What happened to Joseph McCarthy? Everybody he was fighting against has taken over. And even now, sitting in the Oval Office, we have a Marxist Muslim in the Oval Office as a de facto president who's not even qualified to hold the job. They looked into John McCain. Hey, is John McCain qualified? He was born on a Navy base in Panama to parents of the United States Navy. Is he considered natural born? Okay, yes. They didn't even look into Obama, whose father was a British subject at the time of Obama's birth. And because of a law in 1948, Obama born in 1961, he's at least half British subject, which is not a natural born citizen. Doesn't qualify to be in the office. I don't care where he's born, if he's born in Kenya, Hawaii, wherever. And everything points that he's born in Kenya. I don't care. Even if he's born in Hawaii, I don't care if he's born in the middle of the country in Wichita, Kansas. I don't care if he was born in the middle of the Rotunda building at the United States Capitol in 1961. His father was a British subject, did not have any American citizenship. The very best at the time of birth, Obama was half U.S. citizen and half British subject, at very best, which disqualifies him as a natural-born citizen, period. Let alone being a Marxist Muslim. So, carrying on. Now, here's more quotes out of Reid. He says, they're talking about speaking about Republicans being anti-American and filibustering a financial reform bill. He says,
of course I did that on the Senate floor, talking about Wall Street reform. I thought it was wrong they were just opposing that. But remember, I am not talking about Second Amendment rights. That is talking about taking guns to people.
Now, whatever that means. Again, that is not Senator Reid live in the studio. That is me using his voice. I understand that that voice is actually very accurate. The Reid campaign distributed a web ad calling further attention to the domestic enemy's comment, and also Engel's remarks on a radio talk show in January in which she suggested the possibility of citizens taking up arms as, quote, a Second Amendment remedy if Congress keeps going the way it is. Now, she didn't endorse it. She just said it's a possibility. It's interesting. I actually saw a printed piece that Harry Reid mailed out to Democrats in Nevada. And it's funny because he mails stuff out to Democrats. And I know a guy that gets all of his pieces. He handed it around to a few of us. And everything he said about Sharon Engel, if you took off Harry Reid's picture from anywhere on this thing and said paid for by the Reid campaign, put Sharon Engel's picture on it, said paid for by the Sharon Engel for Senate campaign, it would have been a promotion for Sharon Engel. Well, we want to, you know, get rid of the Department of Education, phase out Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid because they're broken systems. Now, we want to end bailouts for these large Wall Street companies that have very little when it comes to any sort of reins on them. But we want to end these things. And he's putting that out as a bad thing. Talk about being out of touch with America. Talk about being out of touch with your constituents. You cannot contact Harry Reid if you live in Nevada. You can't contact him in anywhere. If you live in Nevada, you send an email, you get an automated response. Nobody ever even reads it. You send a standard letter. That standard letter, whatever the topic is, they have standard replies that they send out. He never even reads it. It all goes to a bunch of interns and staffers. You do a phone call, you can never get him on the line. If there's a message that's left, it's listened to by a staffer. Harry Reid never hears anything from anybody in the state of Nevada at all, bar none. Unless they're contributing money, or on a rare occasion, a member of the media. And that's very rare. There's no open access to this guy. He's so out of touch, it's ridiculous. Handlers and handlers and handlers, and all he's doing is standing there, running his face, saying what America wants and what Nevada wants. Well, you don't know what Nevada wants. You couldn't deliver what Nevada wanted if we wrote it down and handed it to you on an engraved template. You take $1, you get back 65 cents. We have the highest unemployment in the country, and you're blocking companies from doing business in Nevada, which is traditionally business friendly. Come on, Harry. You're so out of touch, it makes me sick. For those of you interested in seeing Harry Reid leave since he's so horrible for America, please go online. Donate to the Sharon Engel campaign from anywhere in the country. It's good for the country to get this guy out. It was good when we got Tom Daschle out, but then Harry Reid took over. And it got even worse. We need to get rid of him. We've got to get rid of him. He is the worst Senate majority leader in the history of the entire United States Senate. The worst in history. Which is why Nevada hates the blight on this country. The black eye from Nevada, Harry Reid. Donate to Engel. We'll be right back after these words.
Time is right.
The American Dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property. Until now, announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea, right in the backyard of Chicago itself. America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today. As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on, we'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
And welcome back, guys. Now, I have to tell you, I am a big fan of Chrysler products. I have been since 1997 when Lee Iacocca retired from Chrysler. I'd always wanted one of their new Dodge Ram pickups back in the day. And I wasn't going to go buy a Chrysler product before because Lee Iacocca personally gave money, not corporate money, but personally gave money to, at the time, Handgun Control Incorporated, now known as the Brady Campaign, to screw every American out of their guns. Once he retired, I went and I bought a Ram pickup. And I have not been without a Chrysler product since then. I've had a couple of Jeeps, a couple of Durangos. I have a Durango now along with a Honda. But one thing that I am digging here is Dodge Ram's truck division is now taking what they call direct aim at hunters with a unique feature on its new line of outdoorsman pickup trucks, which is a gun box. Called the Mopar Ram Box Holster. It's a rack that can hold two long guns, rifles, shotguns, or a combination of each, in the lockable, watertight compartment located on either side of the pickup truck bed. What happens is, on the railing on the top of the bed, you can open that up, and in there, it's a lockable casing, and you can actually put long guns in there. It's a $205 option on top of the $1,895 price of the Ram Box feature itself. The racks can be rotated to hold six fishing poles for those who prefer quieter trips to the great outdoors. The Outdoorsman starts at $28,350, includes standard features like scratch-resistant bumpers, puncture-resistant tires, and a tow package. Buyers can order the trim line on most Ram's models, including heavy-duty and long wheelbase versions. So, if you happen to like pickup trucks, you happen to dig what Dodge has to offer, I certainly do, and you want to be able to lock your guns away where nobody can see them. They're hidden inside the bed well, and be able to lock it up and put two guns on one side, maybe a half dozen fishing poles on the other side. You can do that out of the Dodge Ram, the Mopar Ram Box holster, in the Outdoorsman pickup truck series coming out. So I dig it. I know that if I ever get another pickup truck, I'm probably going to get a Ram 2500, which would be the three-quarter ton with the Cummins turbo diesel in there. I'll probably get the full four-door cab and the short wheel-based bed, like the 6.5-foot bed with the tow package and all that good stuff. That'll probably be my next pickup truck, provided I actually need one. There you go, guys. I'm happy that Dodge is stepping up. It's cool.
I'd like to close by saying, To those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.